Today, I'm talking to Dean Jones, founder, owner, and CEO of Realogix Sotheby's International Realty. This is the guy who came from Canada into Washington with a vision, and he turned over huge developments with huge awards. He is now the guy who founded and runs and is the CEO, again, of Realogix Sotheby's International Realty. Now, let's just walk through what this guy's accomplished before you listen to his interview. His former development, T. Jones, Inc., was nationally recognized as the development firm of the year by the Pillars of Industry in 2001. In 2003, the National Association, that's the National Association of Home Builders, named Dean the Marketing Director of the Year. Upon founding Realogix, Inc., he served as an advisor to third-party developments, and that made his firm the catalyst for more than $2 billion in project sales. And that earned his portfolio of clients over 130 sales and marketing awards. In 2012, Dean founded, and he continues to lead, of course, Realogix Sotheby's International Realty, where he oversees more than 325 real estate brokers and staff across 7 offices. These offices consistently rank among the top brokerage offices in their markets in things like highest sales price, highest commissions earned, and highest percentage of active producing agents. We're talking 85%, where the average in most offices is 20 or 25%. When Dean founded Realogix Sotheby's International Realty, he was also awarded the fastest growing private company in Washington State. This is just a few of the things this guy's accomplished. And in today's conversation, Dean and I, we talk about ups and downs of the real estate markets and the key to thinking outside the box, staying ahead of the curve, and achieving success both right now and in the long run. This is the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. Powered by Breakthrough Luxury Coaching, this podcast was created for real estate agents across the world to come together and listen in on conversations with the top real estate agents in the United States and around the world, sharing their stories and ideas and what takes our business to the next level. All right, everybody, it's the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. And today we have an incredibly special guest, Dean Jones, with Realogix Sotheby's International Realty. He is the founder, the CEO, the president. He is a developer as well. He's had awards such as Developer of the Year, many awards selling billions of dollars in real estate in developments, in residential real estate, and awards in marketing. So we are going to have a lot of fun today. Dean, thank you so much.
Jerry, it's so good to be with you. Nice to see you again.
It's so good to see you. So let's get started. You're familiar with the podcast. A few of your agents and colleagues and friends have been on the show, but just give us, I mean, you were born in Canada. Yeah. You have been a top developer in this country. You have been a top real estate broker in this country, and you're an incredible marketer. And just a little, like, you're always kind of ahead of the game. So there's, like, the number of questions I have for you is kind of infinite.
Okay.
But before I even go there, fill in the blanks for us. Anything you want to kind of like ground us on, like, who are you and what is everybody listening? What do all these top real estate agents listening to us today need to know about you?
Well, I think I just approached the industry and this position from a very different perspective, you know, given that I came from Vancouver, BC about 25 years ago with a pickup truck and a checkbook to go and convert some apartment buildings to condominiums and build, you know, new development high rises. Just was never actually a licensed real estate agent myself. So I had always built this business from the mind up, you know, literally asking some of our founding members, what is it that I could do for you that would make you a standout agent?
This is where I'm going to interject, because we got to learn about you first. So before, like, there's this whole story of you being in real estate and you're not a broker.
Yeah.
So, and you're born in Canada. Let's go back. Like, how did you grow up? How did you get into development? And then let's see how that leads you into the real estate world.
Well, clearly I'm still growing up, Jerry, but I worked in the family business. I mean, my father was a prolific developer up in the Vancouver, BC marketplace. Obviously, you're familiar with the foreign direct investment and a lot of the Asian demand that came into that marketplace. And so that gave me a preview of my future. There were a lot of moratoriums up there about no longer able to convert office to residential or apartments to condominium. And so we kind of looked at what market might be on the rise next. So we had some interest in the Seattle area. Obviously, it's the largest metro U.S. market to Vancouver, BC. And so I said, look, I'm in my early 20s. I'm unattached anywhere else. Let's do this. And drove down I-5 and started, you know, working on behalf of T. Jones, Inc., which was the development firm I was the vice president of sales and marketing for. And that was in the 1990s. And there was a lot of changes going on in the city of Seattle and Growth Management Act and policies relative to how the city was going to get shaped. And I think there was always a great respect for Vancouver, BC, because it's a very mature city, a very international city, and a lot of housing policies and zoning inspired many, many cities around the world, in fact. And in fairness, Vancouver took a cue from many other cities around the world. And so that's just sort of my worldly view of development. But I was able to get a preview of what might be next for Seattle and Bellevue metro area. Go ahead.
I want to put some context to that. Let's talk about the big stuff. I want to get back to like where it all started. So you grew up in Canada, you had a family in development. So you've got a lot of exposure to things that most even real estate agents and even developers don't understand coming into the business. So think of Vancouver, just to give some context. A lot of people are familiar with that market, but in that market, there was a lot of influx of money from Asia, right? And in that, it drove prices up.
It did.
And in that, I think it imposed some regulations. And in that, it shifted the market of what happened with development that kind of.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly saw what hyper density would look like. And I mean, a lot of people don't realize that while downtown Vancouver seems like, you know, the Manhattan of the West Coast, I mean, it's actually a residential community. There's more people that leave downtown Vancouver to go to work than come to that commercial center, as a lot of the U.S. markets might be more familiar with. Well, downtown's a place you go to work, but not so much in Vancouver. You know, and in Canada, a lot of people don't realize that like 95% of the Canadian population lives within 100 miles of the southern border. And, you know, there's four or five major markets in Canada. And I would say four out of those five, you know, aspire to be in Vancouver at some point, because there's a lot of, you know, meteorological benefits. It's a much more mild market, you know, in terms of the climate. It's absolutely beautiful. And, you know, when you can get through those winters, hence the snowbird population, which is driving a lot of Canadians down south, you know, I got a preview of what it would be like to develop in a maturing city, and then also drive through some of those trends, such as desiring second homes or third homes and other destination markets. And so that was sort of the runway for me to see real estate development and residential demand. And then of course, you know, we had both the trials and tribulations of working with brokers. Many of my family members are licensed agents or own real estate brokerages in the Vancouver marketplace. So I guess it wasn't that surprising that I ended up in this seat here, you know, 25, 30 years later, you know, running a good sized residential real estate brokerage with core faculties in those very divisions of residential resale, commercial, equity syndication, you know, developments, new construction, and then referrals. Yeah.
So we've got the benefit of hindsight and seeing that you've been, you know, a successful developer and you've got this huge brokerage, but not having the benefit of hindsight, being in your 20s, driving, you know, down, that's so funny to me, being from South Georgia in the United States, but driving down to Seattle, what did you have a vision? What did you envision? What, like, and how did you know? How did you predict? How did you?
Well, look, I had mentors like we all need, you know, not just my father as a, you know, prolific developer and I think a very astute businessman, but also having that separation from him because, you know, I was somewhat on my own for a lot of the time and had to figure it out the hard way, making mistakes. I mean, literally my first project was a 16 unit apartment building and I had to hire the whole crew and did a lot of it without permits and did it the way we did it in Vancouver and learned the hard way about, you know, how life was going to really be.
I love that. Like that's like, is that not, this is what I just heard. Ready, fire, aim.
It was a little cowboy. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. You're like, oh, do I need a permit? Oh.
Yeah. But, you know, I think a theme for me, I was never taught what I wasn't capable of doing. Oh. And so because I didn't go to broker school or developer school, I was really a product of my environment and the opportunity. I get in trouble today still for moving at the speed of opportunity. And that's maybe sometimes why I see around the corner or I'm willing to resource something that might be a longer bet for others. But I've actually absorbed fantastic talent and individuals and entire divisions within my company because some of the bigger backyard brands wouldn't do it. They were either unwilling, unable, or not nimble enough, or failed to see, you know, where the market was going next. And I am a fan of seeing where the market is going next because I want to get there first, and so do my agents, and you know what? So do their consumers. So you'll see we trend forward oftentimes. Yeah, I was the founder of the FutureCast Forum, and I just hosted an event called Market Maker with UBS Wealth Management. And, you know, it's not about MLS forms or sticking signs in the yard or talking about how to farm a market. It's about government policy, taxation, you know, state-to-state migration, international equity, you know, investments or generational wealth transfer. I mean, these are big, big ideas. They're not my ideas.
That's what drives the market. Those are the things that actually drive the market.
They do.
You said move at the pace of opportunity.
Yes, move at the speed of opportunity. It's around us every day. Right now, I see one right behind you, Jerry. Go get it.
Which one?
That's the trick. You got to
find. I see one right in front of me. Yeah. So when you think about like a lot, you said a few things. There's moving at the pace of opportunity and seeing things before they happen. And while you see things before they happen, I have a feeling you've seen things before they happen and you don't always know exactly what's going to happen.
That's right.
But there's still a pace of opportunity to move with no matter what. How do you decipher? How do you go move at the pace of opportunity? And then there's this thing where a lot of people might hear that and they rather than move at the pace of opportunity, they almost go backwards because they see all of the risk.
That's right. There's a lot of people that stop right there. You know, you can hyperanalyze and never get out of beta. And, you know, I think, you know, just start heading that direction and it's going to start feeling good. And then you keep doing it. And then you look for the cues. You know, read those tea leaves, get endorsement. And look, we all need wins, especially after what we've been through in these last 4 or 5 years. I mean, this has been an unbelievable journey for anyone in business, especially in the real estate industry. I mean, the emotions and the dynamics, you know, to go from a sugar high of low, you know, mortgage interest rates to 11 consecutive rate hikes. I mean, we are like bewildered. We have PTSD. And, you know, really what we have a lot of times when the market reboots, and these are very cyclical ideas, is you lose your resolve, you lose the faith to realize that something is going to evolve in front of you. And if you can be the leader of that evolution and stick to your guns and have the confidence and hopefully have the support and the resources to chase after them, you will end up where the market went next because you saw it and you resourced it. I think way too often in all industries, when the market's correct and challenges before us, everyone pulls back. You know, a few of us might give up or cry in our beer, you know, but I think those that double down right now and they stand tall, they are not only going to realize those opportunities first and then celebrate those wins as the market is starting to catch up. They're like, hey, how did you get way ahead of that? You know, well, it's because we never gave up. We just calibrated to the dynamics. There will always be need for buying and selling home and making investments. And I think those that don't pull back even when times are tough. Look, I mean, I founded this company in 2009 and 10, you know, at the depths of the Great Recession.
Where everybody else was running away from this, from real estate.
No, but that was my opportunity. Yeah. I'm not sure Sotheby's International Realty, if I was presenting the same argument today that I did, you know, 13, 14 years ago, I'm not sure that they would say, yeah, Dean, you're our guy. Let's go forward. You're not licensed. You know, you haven't sold residential real estate yourself. And, you know, they were at that hour really looking to unite other affiliates that might be a boutique firm in an important market. But you know what they saw in us at that time, I think, is we had, you know, a bevy of new development projects that we had those listings and that we were developing. But they were, I believe, impressed with the ability to build something from nothing in a market that was very entrepreneurial. And we had a team of founding members. So these were not the actual franchise owners, but my core team of founding members, many of which are still with me today, were top agents that I hand selected to say, look, I'm going this direction to pivot my new development company, my new development project marketing firm into resales. Why? Because the market said I had to. There was no construction financing. The credit crunch was real. I had more projects canceling than discussing new plans. And I was like, wow, this is going off a cliff. Hey, guys, my existing marketing firm was a partnership with a company called Windermere, a very large, actually the number one backyard brand here in the Pacific Northwest. And I outsourced all of my sales through that company. And we did so successfully for many, many years until I went to them and said, it's time to pivot. Let's go ahead and build a condo store. We're going to go into resale. And they said, yeah, Dean, about that. No, we're very concerned about where this market is heading. We're going to pull back. And I issued a buy sell. I actually bought that franchise, which was only new construction for Windermere. Believe it or not, they still have not rebuilt that division. And we do a lot of business with Windermere. So I'm a big fan. But at that hour, that team sold to me, and I was able to then convert that franchise into Sotheby's International Realty and start building first transactions, very premier agents as founding members. And I went to them and said, what can I do for you to build a residential brokerage vessel around you and your goodwill, so that you can be the best agent possible? I realize it's a big move for you to leave the mothership of a large established 40-year-old brokerage company, but you want to join me? I got some entrepreneurial ideas and I would like you to be there. And guess what? I listened to what the agents wanted. I put those resources together and, you know, over the years, we grew. We were one of the fastest growing companies in the Puget Sound region over the last 10 years. We have, you know, 275 great agents and, you know, doing a couple billion in sales a year. But that all started from just a few hand-selected agents that, because of their success, we attracted other agents to follow. And, you know, we weren't writing checks to go and buy our market share. We were earning the hard way.
Well, that would, buying market share could kind of be counterproductive. Do you own it
or do you rent it? Let's be honest. There's some of those models out there. And you have some experience there, so you understand.
Exactly. And for those of the, some people may or may not know what we're talking about. We may get, like, there's so many places to go right now. But that is, I will touch on that, because there's a lot of ways this business has changed so much. But it's funny how, you know, industries can go out and buy out market share, or they can go and serve at such a high level, people run to you. Even in our business, we look at being a real estate agent, you can run and try to buy business, but when the consumer is the prize, then they don't need you.
Yeah. I mean, look, some of those models are based on stock values and Wall Street agendas. You know, I've always been very focused on Main Street, and I see my assets come through the door every day. They go up and down the elevator. I mean, they are just great people. They are amazing collaborators. And, you know, our real estate agent profile might look and feel a little different than, you know, the other companies, because it was built organically and it attracts like-mindedness. And so
there's real supply and demand. And then you can do stats that get the perception or you can have real supply and demand. At the end of the day, it's reality that lasts. And going back on that, though, to really dig deep, or I want to repeat a few things you said. You said something really powerful, is when things get tough, you look at whatever the dynamics of a situation are, calibrate them, calibrate dynamics. And then you talked about endorsements. And then you talked about whenever something's happening, owning and recognizing the reality, like what's the true trajectory of what's happening right now. And when it's downward, rather than run and shut down, you pivot and shift. And the opportunity that you saw was you saw an opportunity in development where it was 2008. Things are looking, this is something's off. Rather than shut everything down, you looked at where the market was going and you pivoted. And you pivoted ahead of the market. And then you said several times things about aligning with the right people and aligning to the right endorsements.
Yep. Having that vision and attracting your talent, because you can never do it alone. Look, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. You should look at the silver lining in all of the challenges that have been before us, whether that's, you know, government policies or, you know, this NAR lawsuit, or it's, you know, what's happening, you know, with the economy or market cycles. In a down market, I've learned that you can build market share. And in an up market, you will make money off that market share. Sometimes it's hard to do both. It's sometimes hard to build market share and make money at the same time because of the resources it takes to build the market share. And keep in mind, when I say that, I believe you have to earn your market share, because otherwise buying it, you're just renting it. Last time I checked, all of our agents are independent contractors, and you know, they might slap on those golden handcuffs for a couple of years, but now we're seeing those agents boomerang back to where they were comfortable before, after, you know, the promises have burned off, or the marketing support, or the stock value never showed up. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can attract an agent to your company. I just think you need to earn it in order for it to be sustainable. You know, those aren't things you can buy. You know, trust, integrity, you know, legacy, and brand recognition. These are things you must earn. You cannot acquire. But that said, you know, I wanted to partner with the best. And so Sotheby's International Realty, I had some choices. I had, you know, a wonderful market. I had some pedigree and experience, but I was going to build the next generation real estate brokerage right here in a very entrepreneurial town of Seattle, Bellevue metro area, which is also home to other ideas like Zillow and Redfin, just to name a few. But I just saw a different way of going about it, but I knew I couldn't do it just on my Realogix brand or in my name, because that's not internationally recognized. That is certainly nothing that's going to attract the kind of pedigree I was looking for. So I feel that I made the right decision in choosing Sotheby's International Realty. And I feel like they made a bet in choosing me. And together we were the right pair to go forward and truly cultivate this from the ground up. But I certainly could not have done that without a pedigree that dates back to 1744, and just add my
seed. It helps, right?
It helps a tremendous amount.
Get the right endorsements, but you've still got to show up and do the work. Now, you're somebody, it's funny because you're such a dichotomy, because you're the guy who, like, on one end, you came from Canada and you did this 16 unit development with no permits. Like, I love it. You just do it. But on the other end, you've got like the pedigree of Sotheby's, da, da, da. But it's like, you can have all of the endorsements and all of the marks, but you still got to have the audacity. You've still got to have the nerve. You still got to take the action. And that's what you do. And sometimes you just do it. And sometimes,
well, do it respectfully. And, you know, yeah. I now use permits because we build high rises, but
well, you learn.
I had a time with who I now consider a friend now, Leslie Williams. I mean, I had hired her, Williams Marketing, and she was a boutique brokerage firm way back in the 90s. And I actually used her in our family business to sell our condominium high-rise development alongside Cliff Bowman, who's a definite mentor of mine in the pre-sale marketing world. And what she had said to me when I was coming around with the brokerage and starting to get into her business, right? She's like, well, Dean, that's just not what we do here. And I remember her sort of schooling me because I was getting sponsorship from the local title reps and the lenders, and basically talking to people that she felt were her people, because that's the way it's been for the last 15 or 20 years. And I didn't realize it until many years later that I just was bold enough to think that, well, first of all, you don't own those relationships. I'm going to earn them. And it's their decision to support me on my cross promotion. And I was doing, you know, really unique things, having, you know, pop-up events at speakeasies and talking to other real estate agents from all different brands. And just realizing that I was lightly treading on some turf that other people had been building for many, many years. And look, it's no different for any of our real estate agents out there. I mean, you guys share a marketplace, but I just simply never was taught that I couldn't do something. And as long as you're acting with integrity, and that you've got a core mission that can be followed, I think you are totally able to earn your business, even if that's, you know, lost market share for somebody else. And, you know, we've come to respect each other now over, you know, 25 years later, because the market needs that. There always needs to be some new ideas brought to a sea of sameness, right? Isn't that really what the industry has been so often?
It's so true. It reminds me of being an agent in Atlanta and not having a network and building one. And I dominated a neighborhood called Historic Brookhaven. That was something I didn't know you didn't do, because it already had its people. And I was like, well, I had no idea. And I went in and I think I shook a few people up. But at the end of the day, when I went after it, I went after it with respect and integrity and had a core mission. I gained the respect of the other agents in the area, of the other agents in the neighborhood, and built a huge business on it. But it's important, because it's like you said, nobody told me what I can't do. There's so much power in that. And something earlier that this kind of goes into, but I think it's an important thing. This is in development, because I want to bring it up to you. You were talking about, you know, when there are a lot of people who pull back. When things get hard, things look scary, the headlines give you bad news, a lot of people just go, put on the brakes and even go backwards. And you were talking about calibrating dynamics. And you were talking about, like, even when the market was going bad as a developer, you looked at getting into the brokerage side, and you
That's
already, right? Like, and then I think about COVID. So during COVID, I remember a lot of offices were just shutting down office space. Now, this is my husband's world, right? So as I'm so busy, like the deal, I wasn't even aware real estate was in trouble. I was so busy just closing out and moving on with what I had. But I do remember watching this, and while a lot of offices were pulling back, shutting down, it was Facebook, Google, and Microsoft were all, I think it was 63 acres in Atlanta, a contract was being finalized. Yep. There was, I don't remember the numbers anymore, but I think Google and Microsoft were doing, guys, I may not have these numbers, but they're close, exactly right, but around 500,000 square feet of office space. And I think Facebook was at about 100,000 that they were negotiating to expand or move into Atlanta. Yeah. And in the headlines, not a thing was being mentioned. Not a thing. They weren't talking about it. They weren't disclosing it. They were quiet. But as the market appeared to be shrinking back, you got these companies weren't alone. They're just big ones that we have easy access to that information. They were expanding in the midst of all of that.
There will always be opportunities, you know, in all peaks and troughs of any cycle in any industry. And there's always going to be the ability, you know, to maximize your opportunity within that, you know, reset or trajectory. So buying the dip is an absolute strategy for those that have the resources and the fortitude, you know, to move forward when everybody pulls back. As you know, my old man always said, you know, it's just when everybody buys, you sell, and when everybody sells, you buy. You know, there's no doubt. I gotta be honest. You know, I have many fearful nights. Sometimes decisions are driven by fear or not knowing, but I know that, you know, hope alone is not a strategy, right? So you do need to apply the research and, you know, build out a business plan and then seek the endorsements. And, you know, you don't always get endorsements, because if you're talking to people that know more about a subject matter than you do, and they're like, yeah, Jerry, I don't think that whole podcast thing is going to work out. Well, it looks like it did, right? But, you know, the reality is sometimes pivoting is a function of requirement, because sitting to be overwhelmed by oncoming waves is not a very good feeling. So you either charge the wave, right, and get under it, or you pull back up beach. But just sitting with everybody else wondering why their beach blanket's wet and they're drowning, you know, is not a very good experience. So I think that that is the truth, that every time that there is a very significant pivot for myself personally or in this company, it has always been driven by other events surrounding us that required the pivot to happen. And I think the talent might just be recognizing that it's happening to you. Like, we've all had personal trauma and, you know, really struggles in life, and sometimes things that happen to us. I want you to turn around and make it happen for you. I say that to my agents. We've had the lowest sales volumes in nearly 30 years. I mean, we're, you know, probably 20, 30% corrected since peaks a couple of years ago. And a lot of us have whiplash and like, what happened? Well, you can have your moment of pity. You can certainly, you know, reassess where you're standing, and the feelings that you have, I think, are your feelings. So I'm not going to take those away from you. Recognize what they are. Have the emotional endurance to move forward past that, though, and make a plan, because not planning is not a solution. And then recognize where the opportunities are, and they are all around us. And a big part of that right now, Jerry, I'm sure many of us would agree in the industry that, you know, sales volumes are low because people aren't listing homes when they're sitting on a sub 4% mortgage rate, and new developments are the permits and starts are way shy of where they were in the past because construction credit is elusive and some of the markets are correcting still. But what I can tell you is there will always be the next market, and our job is to curate that. And we do that through content marketing and talking about the Futurecast Forum and, you know, basically envisioning where the market might be in 25 or 2030, and then backing that up to a point of purchase today. So let me give you an example. So our in-city housing market has gone through a pandemic, social dysfunction, and some really challenging times in retail and residential services and amenities. I mean, you know, these cities are not going to roll up and go away. They have been bombed in the past and come back from past pandemics. Remember, 100 years ago, history is repeating itself. We had the Spanish flu, and there were many that thought these cities weren't going to survive, and they did. In fact, they thrived because the aftermath of the Spanish flu created the roaring 20s, right? Credit was cheap. Social engagement came back. People wanted to be in speakeasies, have a cocktail, wear a frapper dress, and party like it was 1920s. Well, is that going to happen again? It could, right? And right. I do think
well, would it be different? But yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, now we have vaccines, and I don't think the feds will allow, you know, credit to be quite as loose as it was back then. And hopefully let's avoid a stock market crash, which I do think we have way too many safeguards and protections now for that to happen. We'll leave politics aside for the moment. But what I do know is that when the market pulls back and you have a lot of wait and see buyers and a lot of wait and see agents and a lot of wait and see brokerages, if you fast forward, okay, what's it likely to play out in the next couple of years, right? Or in the next decade, and you promote that idea about that vision forward and you accelerate that vision to a point of purchase today, what you can get to is to say, wait a minute, these high mortgage rates, that's a temporary infliction. I mean, I think the Fed's going to pause for a while on any rate cuts, but I think we're in for one or two rate cuts this year. And certainly post-election, there will be more if we get inflation under control. So looking at those macroeconomics, we're going to see some rate cuts. So does that mean you wait for the rate cuts to buy, or do you buy the dip now? Because we're seeing home prices, you know, at a trough value, especially in our market after peak and trough correction. So you buy, then refi. That's the strategy. And so what we're trying to do is give our agents the tools to put that message out. And we use them as distribution channels for content that we help generate through experts that see around the corner. And suddenly they're getting the phone ringing saying, hey, I just read this blog post, or I just saw your podcast, or I just saw you in an article where you were talking about the future. Do you really think that's true? Is now a great time to buy something below replacement cost, even though mortgage rates are high? Well, yeah, the mortgage rates are a temporary infliction.
That's kind of a funny question, isn't it?
Well, but it's amazing.
By the way, you asked it. It's like, is there such thing as a dumb? It's interesting.
I think people need to spark a conversation that leads to a residential demand. I think, Jerry, that's why they put a bracelet on your wrist and say, you look beautiful. Or they say, come aboard this boat we're about to sell you, because you'll never believe how well it performs. Or let me give you the fourth night free in this vacation rental, and then we'll talk about ownership. I mean, why do they do all that? Because they're experiences. So if we went from a frothy peak market during COVID to a 30-year low in sales volumes, does that mean that everybody's desire and demand went away? Or does it mean that they're hibernating because they're in shock and awe, or PTSD, or rates, or just the world? I mean, there's a lot of reasons to pause. I get the cause for pause, but you can also do the opposite and be a catalyst for demand and see where the opportunities are. And then maybe you're buying that future retirement home now, or maybe you're helping your kids get into their first home purchase. You know, there's a lot of ways to tax plan, and don't even get me started with generational wealth transfer. I mean, you know, what I've learned over the last couple of years in our partnership with UBS Wealth Management, it is game changing. Trillions of dollars are going to change hands. There will be massive liquidation of portfolios of apartments and strip malls and motels and gas stations and you know, individually owned assets that, you know, we are going to move from a very active investment strategy from people that are now in their 70s and 80s into a passive investment strategy where they're saying, I'm not changing the light bulb. I'm not going to get stood up by that renter one more time. I want to be on the plane with my spouse, traveling the world and enjoying, you know, a tax-friendly income stream. Those are all very possible scenarios, but it's amazing to me how few understand, you know, the tax strategies or the way to do that without, you know, impaling yourself with capital gains taxes. Then you look at, you know, state policies, and, you know, we just lost Jeff Bezos to Miami, and he's famously buying hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate. But that was all centered around, you know, capital gains tax strategies for our state legislators. You know, we now have a 7% capital gains tax on equities. It excludes real estate gains, but it's definitely targeting the tech wealth that's here in the Seattle Bellevue metro area. Well, it has a consequence.
Interesting.
Cost 7% more. What do you think he did after his G6 landed in Miami? He sold a couple billion dollars worth of Amazon stock. So anyway, I say that because there's tax-friendly states and there's others not so much. There's winners and losers. There's net migration. And I just love all that stuff. But I'm just saying this out loud because I don't know that it's enough on the mind.
It's not. Asian. It should be. It's what everybody's looking at, like, frankly, they don't even want to go into the lawsuit because it's such a reaction. It's such a surface thing. It's not even what's right in the headlines. It's not what's happening. It's not even, I don't want to throw you off. It's not even about commission, this lawsuit. It's actually not. Commission is just what gets everybody else excited and gets things in the headlines.
It's very poorly.
It's not what it's about. On the end of, I think it's been really interesting. The listeners aren't going to shoot me for going into the lawsuit and jumping back out. But I do think something really interesting is that you talk about the transfer of wealth and the active investors to the passive investors.
Sure.
That's on the surface. What is your take on all the layers of change when you've got a generation of active investors and their money is going to potentially, it sounds like, passive investors? What does that mean for, sounds like there's a lot of opportunity for a lot
well, there
of
is.
People,
yeah, there's probably
for services, for jobs, for money, for real estate. There are so many. How many things are going to change as a result of that?
Trillions, of dollars of transactions, and those include commercial ones too. So let me just play this out. So let's just say you and your spouse are in the sunset of life. You've amassed a pretty significant portfolio of investment properties. You're in a 6-bedroom home that haven't had 5 bedrooms slept in 23 years. You have a massive capital gain sitting there. You have desire to live in a sunshine destination and maybe lighten your load a little bit in local real estate while having a lock and leave, you know, lifestyle. Okay. So here's one couple that are in the process of saying, well, it might not be tomorrow, Jerry, but definitely in the next 5 years and 100% in the next 10 years. Okay. So if you know these are going to be changes in your life and they're in the next 5 or 10 years, might be the next 2 or 3, depending on market cycles.
It might be tomorrow. I would know.
It might be now. It might be
right now. People
who
say 10 years often do it tomorrow and vice versa.
Well, they wait for the events to happen. It's a little bit like tax planning or, unfortunately, estate planning, you know, in the event of a death. But the reason we want to have those conversations as real estate advisors, I didn't say, you know, agent, I said an advisor, because it's not just about the transaction. We got to think well beyond the transaction. We got to think like a wealth manager. We got to be an inspiring body that helps to influence the possibilities. And, you know, put that bracelet on your wrist. This looks beautiful, don't you think? Well, they don't know what they want until they see it and feel it. So what we're finding is volumes of would-be buyers and would-be sellers that didn't know they needed to play an act right now. That the right time to buy and the right time to sell doesn't always happen at the same time, because I think it's a great time to buy an in-city condominium, but maybe not the best time to sell the existing estate. Probably a good time to buy in Palm Springs, you know, with some of the changes that they're doing there with, you know, Airbnb restrictions and such. And there's some people that are letting go of assets because they're done with it for the season. Or you look at, you know, the exchange rate between Canadian dollar and US dollar. And sometimes when there's a call in Canada, that's the first thing to be let go. So like we're watching all those things. So you consider that over this next journey, you're going to have this would-be buying demand and this would-be selling demand. And our job is to line them up like pearls in a necklace and say, here's the decisions that you want to make in this trajectory. We think you should digest the following content. And going back to the tax planning, they're going to sell their home. They're going to want to enjoy capital gains exceptions. And there's some concern about politics and whether capital gains taxes could become regular income in the years forward. That's a whole nother conversation.
Whoa.
So think about the rush to the counter if that happens, especially if you're talking multiple 7 figures of taxation. Number two, they're going to unload millions of dollars worth of commercial properties, which maybe you're not a commercial agent, but you can certainly make a referral to a commercial company. And they're going to take that excess equity from the single family home after making a transaction in that condominium, and they're going to invest it in Palm Springs, and they might buy a boat. So here you are as a individual real estate advisor, and you just picked up 3, maybe 4 commissions and a referral. And probably a free boat ride and definitely friends for life, right? Because you did all that in a very cohesive way, you know, not requiring a Series 7 license or anything. I mean, you want to have your lawyer deal with the legal and have your tax planning done with the accountant, have your wealth management done with your partner. But shouldn't you show up to this business, Jerry, with, you know, the leaders of each of those verticals, and so that you're coming in with your army to provide a cohesive solution for trillions of dollars of wealth transfer. And by the way, help them out. Even if you're a significant agent and you normally don't help the son, you know, buy their first studio apartment for, you know, $320,000, if it's attached to the parents that are helping you buy that, it's probably a good move for that portfolio, for that family relationship. So, and by the way, I've moved people from a studio apartment into a $20 million waterfront estate because they were in the right industry at the right time. So never, you know, judge a book by its cover. And I just think that that's our duty, is to have a sort of 360 view of our role. And that's very different than, you know, sending out postcards to the neighborhood, in my opinion.
And it's actually the way to get deals done. What I love about when I listen to that, it's even the agents, I hate to say this because I love real estate agents. They're my most favorite. And I know most favorite is not proper grammar, but they are my most favorite. Or is that proper? Anyway, They're my most favorite people in the world. You're like, well, I don't know.
I'm now questioning the grammar.
Right?
I think you're
yeah,
it. I
me
think you're
too.
good.
Me too. So, but regardless of all that, everybody knows what I mean.
Yeah.
But as you think about that, there's so much focus on how many closings we do. But what's so funny is it's the focus on the journey and exactly what you walk through that happens to create transactions, not the focus on the actual transaction, maybe the awareness of it. But it's
I
the
think
focus
you
on
do.
the journey that opens up, you know, 20 doors that you don't see when you don't look past one closing.
I think the agents that focus on the smile lines more than the trend lines, and certainly more than the lines of credit from their commissions. I mean, they're just really great people that are in it for the right reason. I mean, this is a service industry at the end of the day. And, you know, we could tie that back to the NAR lawsuit and the issues there, or what's been happening on Wall Street with some of these, you know, real estate brokerages and their stock values. And what is the future in all this? But look, let me tell you something.
Well, what is the future?
There is not going to be robots performing the function that I just described. And at the end of the day, this is a lifestyle proposition. I mean, obviously there's, you know, the five D's of real estate, right? There's death, there's divorce, there's diapers, there's dislocation, right? Job transfer. And then there's, I guess you could say there's, you know, development or discretion, the idea that I want to be and live in a different environment. Any one of those things, you know, are going to drive real estate demand to buy and sell. Look, could AI and some algorithm and a robot maybe say, hey, the propensity for this demographic or for this neighborhood, you know, to respond in a certain way is going to be beneficial for you? Absolutely. I believe in AI. We're using it right now. But I do not think that giving away half your commission is a very fruitful and enduring exercise. And there's some business models doing that. We're going to see a future. There's going to be a flight to quality, which is full service and full fee. And that is negotiated by the buying agent or the seller, ultimately getting back to the NAR issue. And then there'll be a flight to quantity, which is discount, high volume, low service. And I've already seen that migration in our market because, you know, the middle is missing now. There is a flight to quality where I want to aspire and grab that brass ring, and or there's a flight to I have to drop my costs and do more volume and just try and get into that sort of efficiency. And there's brokerages and business models for both. Obviously, I think Sotheby's International Realty is the flight to quality. And I would submit in a brief commercial, something we're working on, getting back to tax planning and legacy. I want this to be the last brokerage you ever have to join. So it's hard to break up with your brokers and your brokerage. But if we provide a better job at giving you a legacy business model that you can retire, I mean, I think our business card is blue and a passport is blue for a reason. I mean, this is the one brand you can travel the world with and be invited into living rooms because we're big enough to matter, but small enough to care. I mean, don't you feel that way around the world?
Yeah.
And just what we're doing right now. I mean, this is what this is all about. But you have to build a team and then you have to get out of their way and then have support systems from your brokerage to help operate your business because, you know, you don't have to sunset your career when you sunset in life. I think you can, you know, put your picture over the fireplace and say, go team, go. And I have a number of extremely innovative, and some of them are younger than you might think, that are already planning their future. So for my talent acquisition, one of the conversations we have is to say, look, I know you're, you know, a new coming agent. I know that this is an interview process, but where do you want this all to end? I mean, a lot of people don't make decisions to temporarily stay put, right? They want to be on a flight path and a trajectory that's going to realize their ultimate goal. Well, you know, welcome to the Emerald City. We're on the yellow brick road. Let's do this together.
Well, it's kind of like there's the connecting flights and the direct flights. The direct ones are much better. And then the direct flights with the, what is the name of it when you can actually sleep? And like, not just first class, but when you can sleep. I forget what that's called. Delta One? Is it Delta One? I fly Delta.
Yeah. Lately. Well, you fly better than I do, my dear. Right. So.
When did I do that? I forgot where I went, but you could get in the first class and they've got the bed and everything. Anyway, but it's the direct flight with all you need.
Yeah, and so
As
I
a
think our job is to provide those advantages, and sometimes you're having conversations that are ethereal to the primary goal. But what's my commission split? How many business cards am I going to get? And I'm like, with all due respect, if your first conversations are about those sort of economics, I said, I'm not sure we're in alignment right now. I want to add more business than you can imagine to your portfolio. The only numbers that you should worry about is 1099.
Oh, I
At the
love
end of the
that.
year, did you make more money than you did at the other company? You
Oh.
cannot save your way to prosperity.
Oh, I love that. Like we've had like 20 quotes minimum from Dean Jones on this interview today. I love that. You cannot save your way. That sums it up. If you when you come into a brokerage or in any business situation and you start looking at what am I gonna get? Like just numbers financially. Not big picture, how are we creating synergy? I can take something, I can come into this relationship and take something from you. I can get this from you in this relationship. Or I can come into this relationship and I can go, as a result of being working together, even when you're the big broker and somebody else is just the agent, they're not just the agent, right? But it's as they come together, where do they build something together where each entity
Yes.
gets more and
Better
the entity
together.
as a whole grows more. And when there's the mentality of, well, what am I gonna get and not how we're going to grow together, there's going to be a scarcity mindset that ultimately, when that happens in a business, whether it's a real estate brokerage or any business, that is a momentum for of destruct that is energy momentum action towards destruction,
I mean,
which
it
is
can be very
great.
corrosive. If you wake up in the morning and you say, "Well, what have you done for me lately?" I don't know that the day is going to go well. At the end of the day, we are trying to build
Right.
culture. And look,
Right.
culture is like this aquarium we share, and we're all fish together, of different scales and of different journeys. But the culture we keep is the water we swim through. And if that's crystal clear and healthy, we're all going to perform better. If it's murky and corrosive or even dangerous, no wonder some might want to jump out of that, pond into a new one. So I really view my job as CEO. I mean, I just finished a book, and the latest data is in the temptation to micromanage. I'm just focused on three things: vision, culture, and the numbers, right? At the end of the day, it is a business, and hopefully not a nonprofit. But I have an amazing support team that we've attracted over the years, some of which have been with me from the beginning, and notably some that are no longer with me. And I think what happens is, if you show up for the wrong reasons or you have the different agenda, you're probably not going to survive in that fishbowl very long. Or it might be uncomfortable. So there is this natural thing that I've learned. I've never built a brokerage from scratch before. And look, Jerry, I've been investing the last couple of years. They'd be lying to you if they said, "Wow, it's been very profitable to be a general brokerage," especially in a high competitive market where we've got competitors that are competitive predators that are targeting my agents on an hourly basis. And they're saying the grass is greener. Here's a lollipop. I promise to give you one every week. What was your name again? You can see what's happening.
Right, yeah.
So
Yeah,
it
exactly.
requires fortitude, hopefully the resources for that rainy day. But we've been investing. Are we consolidating? Are we going to right size? These are all friendly terms about making really difficult discussion points with your staff or your environments. I mean, I don't know what the future of the real estate office is going to be, but I know we'll have less overall square footage, but we'll do a higher value of the square footage we invest in. They're always going to be premier Main Street locations. We've got food and beverage operations and valet parking, and it's as much a lifestyle center and living room for my agents as it is a place to go to the copier or to get some professional help. They collaborate, and that's what culture is. And so, the great experiment that I'm on right now is to envision the future of the real estate office. And again, these are people, not robots or, tech platforms. We have all that too. It is
Yeah.
about bringing them together, because when they collaborate, there is ignition, there is inspiration, education, activation. Boom, let's go.
Well, so a lot of that comes back to experience. When you're a broker, the experience that you have as a broker is the foundation. Well, what creates experience? What's beneath what creates experience? The mindset, the culture, the experience that created, creates the action that creates outcomes.
Yep. And the will to believe. Don't forget, when you dream, when you think about what might be next, where is your faith? Where is your confidence? And having the will to believe that if I go to that meeting at my office, or I attend that happy hour or that community event, that there's going to be something there for me. I don't always know what it's going to be, but not showing up is not an option. And I have rarely put myself out there where I didn't feel like it was worth it. And even if it was just a reminder that I can do it, you got to do something to get something. You know, there's got to be an action. And, you know, have your moment to understand your situation, compartmentalize, but use it as a great character builder and push off that like a block at the start of a race. And let that hit you in the stomach and go, okay, that's there. I recognize what it is. I carry it with me. But at the end of the day, you want to be with kites, not anchors. And you got to get out of that mindset and start, you know, moving to what's next for you and limiting those around you that are anchors. They're sucking your time. They're tapping your energy. They're probably looking for something from you. Or they're just commiserating in dysfunction. And unfortunately, I think there's some very bad habits that happened during COVID and the pandemic. And yes, we are having hybrid work weeks. And yes, there may be work from home or work from the car mentalities out there. But I don't think that we are forever no longer needing community or collaboration and connectivity. And that's what I do think is in the physical presence of one another, an important part of our real estate enterprise. And that goes for your agents and for your clients. Get into their living rooms, invite them to an event. These are some of the things I'm trying to do to re-catalyze the culture, because I would say to you that we had the most to lose during the pandemic, because we were so effervescent as a culture and coming together and having fun community events and, you know, lifestyle experiences and, you know, wine bars and food and beverage programs and all kinds of mixers and caravans. I mean, when was the last time you got in a Sprinter van with, you know, 10 of your agent buddies and went and hit open houses? I mean, some of those things just don't happen.
Well, remember, I'm not an agent anymore. Right. But yeah. But we did just finish it, the Lauderdale Yacht Club, last week with one of our breakthrough luxury events for exactly what you're talking about. It's like the 20s are here. Everybody's coming out. We're going to party. Right. It's time. We're they ready to get that back together. All right. Now, I'm going to ask you the final three. Guys, there's so much. Should we touch on the Sitzer Burnett for a minute?
Sure.
Okay. You know, it's funny because there are 3 points in that lawsuit: price fixing. The second point was about this forced commission share, because, you know, it was a dollar, right? But now it's zero. It's a dollar difference. Price fixing, well, we all know we can get our houses listed for $1,000 or for $50 or for a commission that might range from, we've had agents at Breakthrough Luxury listing houses for 8% and houses listed for less and even more, even 10% or... Right. So but then there's this other little topic about having to use MLS. That's the third one.
Right.
And now that one's not being talked about in the media.
Right. Well, I mean, when you're saying having to use the MLS, I mean, some of these guidelines have not been, you know, mandated or confirmed. I will say the Northwest MLS, which is in my backyard here. And again, I'm not the king of compliance. I have a designated broker.
We know.
No, I get my permits now. I am in compliance.
You learn, right?
But, you know, there are still municipalities and states that don't have stringent requirements on clear cooperation. There are off-market websites specifically for this purpose. And to hit on the first two, I mean, obviously here we have always had segregation between the buy side and the list side of the commission. So the sellers pay the commission, not the buyer's agent. The sellers always set the commission rates. Certainly the agents have marketing ideas on what might be in their best interest, but it's their decision. And since 2019, we have advertised the commission rate for the buy side on the Northwest MLS. Now, that's assuming that everything is listed on the Northwest MLS. In new construction, very famously, only a small portion of the actual inventory is listed there. And as you know, some of our more capable agents do a significant portion of their business off market. That's not because they're trying to not cooperate or collaborate. It's just because the inventory is not available or they're making it happen. They're looking over the hedge and saying, hey, what'd you sell?
What was interesting, and we'll probably edit this out and do the final three, is the lawsuit. The lawsuit is actually, I'm gonna just hit pause because. So of course we should just touch on Sitzer Burnett, right?
No, still, is that going on? I have PTSD over this.
I think everybody does, isn't it funny? As you know, we talked a minute offline. I think there's a lot in the headlines that's not real. Yeah. And there are a lot of big opportunities that you and I think are really aligned on, but I think everybody'd like to hear what you have to say.
Well, I think guardrails are, always helpful. I think overly regulating some things, in my experience in the development world, there are like affordable housing policies that have indirectly through cause and effect the amount of development that was going on that created the inventory crisis that led to more of the affordable housing issue. So I say that because if we're going to be doing policy whack-a-mole and trying to overly regulate something that was operational in the free enterprise system, then just prepare for there to be some balloon squishing, right? Where you squeeze this side of the balloon and it ends up creating a vacancy here and occupying more space over there. For instance, buyer's agency agreements, probably a good idea. I think good agreements make for good relationships. And I know many agents that have worked their buns off only to find out that the buyer went somewhere else. That doesn't feel very good. Now, on the other hand, some agents are really uncomfortable articulating their value or talking about a percentage fee that they command for their service. But those agents that know how to command that appropriate fee for their services, I mean, they're at the end of the day able to agree to negotiate and work on behalf of that client or not. And if you want to work with me and you want the advantages that I bring, I will provide you with a full service. And my expectation is a full fee. And here is what my time is worth. It's no different than law firms. You could go to a law firm and find someone for $200 an hour, or you can find one for $1,500 an hour. Yeah. And you might say, what's the difference? That only took you 15 minutes to make a decision. I say, well, don't forget the 15 minutes came from, 45 years of experience so that I, ultimately provided you with a more efficient resource. And at the end of the day, the value of the solution is critical. When the product value exceeds the cost, it is not an expense, it is an investment. And that's the way we should be approaching the industry. And I'm going to take you on a tour. In fact, let's talk about that. If you and I were going to go to Everest and we're in the airport and we know we need a Sherpa for this journey. You and I haven't done this before. You'd probably get to the top of Everest much quicker than I could. And you'd be more well-rested because you'd be in one of those lay down seats and I'd be in, steerage probably. But when we got there and there was a Sherpa at the airport that said, two for one, Everest experience, $250. And then I had in my little black book, I said, but I have this incredible resource through UBS Wealth Management or from Sotheby's International Realty that highly recommends this Sherpa. And it's going to be $2,500. To whom will you place your life on that journey? Is there a commodity resource, a flight to quantity, or is there a qualified resource and a flight to quality? And, you know, I still think these transactions are really significant, especially the ones that might not even be on the market. So in the world of the MLS, if everything that's available is on the MLS, that's fantastic. And if your job as a realtor would be to sift through the listings and find one for your buyer, fantastic. I do not think that that's 100% of the opportunity, however. And I think our agents do a number of transactions that were never listed and weren't even available this morning at 9 a.m. But by 5 p.m. today, because I know what you want, we're going to go ahead and compel that would-be seller to consider a transaction. And it might be in the country club, or it might be over the fence that you're having that conversation. But our agents go well beyond whatever is listed in the MLS when they're on, you know, the truffle hunt of a lifetime. Exactly. Right. So those are my thoughts.
And I think the greatest thing about it is that so often I think it's just been disregarded, the real estate agent, especially the representation of buyers, and all of the headlines that are so misleading have also sparked an interest and created a really great door opener to some really powerful conversations to communicate and change our industry for the better. Final three questions.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
First question. When you look back at your success in real estate, what has been your greatest resource for that?
I'm going to take this one personally, that in order to be successful in business, you have to be successful in life. In order to be successful in life, you have to be balanced and you have to, you know, fly a kite and drop the anchors. And, you know, I've been through a lot, as we all have, through this pandemic and through a domestic reorganization and all the chaos of this industry and, you know, and figuring out what is an enduring and committed relationship and what is not. And so I'm going to take this one to my father and my mother, because they always work in pair. But, you know, the words that he used for me going through a lot of challenge in life is two things. And it's so simple. You'll get through it and we're behind you. So the first one is a vision that there will be a better path forward for you and for your profession, but you need to work on you before you can work on them. And then having resources, whether it's emotional or it's financial or it's spiritual, is going to add to your confidence that you can see the destination you're going to arrive to and you will get there, because it's never alone. The idea that we are all independent spirits in this world or ecosystem, I just don't think it's true, because it's what it's took, you know, for me to be with Sotheby's International Realty. And certainly that's a legacy that I'm only applying one layer to. But I'm so proud of the company we keep and the results that we create. So my answer is complicated, because in this industry, it is a 360 of inputs and requirements to perform at a high level. And, but you got to have a vision and you got to have the confidence.
Vision, confidence, and always being aligned to the right people and growing, evolving and growing.
That's exactly right. It's not static, you know? So you're either growing or you're dying. And, you know, I think the status quo is a terrible place to be, because if it gets too easy, it means you're not pushing hard enough. And I just prefer to be on the edge of my seat. I tap my toe in elevators. I hum songs. I step over cracks. I gamify everything in my head. You know, I'm sure there's a diagnosis for all that, Jerry, but I just know that it keeps me thinking. Some of my best ideas are in the middle of the night.
If it's too easy, it means you're not doing enough. Is that what you, I think it was?
Yeah. Although I do believe in the sunset too. And you know, balance is a big part of that. So yeah. You know, you got to love what you do and who you're doing it with. And, you know, that's why it comes back to the home is just such an important place to be. It should be a sanctuary and not a, not a place of stress. And so I think our journey with this profession is to put the people we love the most in the best possible position to enjoy that sanctuary. And, and for that, we would love to charge a fair fee.
Right. Well, fair is an F word, you know. That reminds me, this is the final three, but I got to add this. There's a Tyler Perry video. Do you know who Tyler Perry is? Tyler Perry's from Atlanta. He does like...
Oh, no, Tyler Perry, of course.
Yeah. Tyler Perry. And he has a video before he was doing movies. He was still in the... I think it was in the Fox... I know he did a lot of stuff in the Fox Theater. It had to be in the Fox Theater, but there's a video out there called Let Him Go. And in that, she says, there's two places you find peace in life. No, only two places you find peace in life. One's in the grave, and the other one's in your house.
Yeah.
And if there's no peace in your house, something's wrong. And then she goes on, or he, but she, because it's Medea on stage before Medea was famous. It is so good. I'm going to put it as a link in the show notes for this interview because it's so, it's because it's not just, it's about romantic relationships, but it's also about relationships with people and business and life.
Yeah.
It's so good. I'm going to leave it there. A lot of our listeners have probably heard it.
Well, and you should see Tyler Perry's house. He's got a lot of peace because he's got a lot of house.
I have. Right. Wow. Right. Well, it's insane. So anyway, question number two. I had to drop that. It's so good. Okay. Question number two is book. If there's one book you would recommend, and it's okay if you have more, what is it?
So I finished two recently. A CEO only does three things, as I mentioned earlier, which is, programming, the vision and the culture and the economic performance of the company. And then the other one is Rocket Fuel, which I'm sure many of us have read, is all about how to activate, the energy in the company. I think my takeaway from these two things is it is an ecosystem that has to be scaled. And I have personal passion for people I care greatly for that have operated at such a high level for so long by themselves without infrastructure or appropriate support that they literally burn out. I mean, they lose relationships or sadly even their life.
Sounds like a real estate agent, right?
It's a real estate agent. Yeah. And then you get to this place where, some of the greatest brands in our history have passed when they did. And it was just not a very easily transferable ecosystem. So as I look at what I'm building and continue to build, because it's a journey, it's never alone. I mean, it's with a collective that you must attract, and they have to be incentivized, and they have to believe in your vision, enjoy the culture, and then have the economic benefits. So I think that's the takeaway that I would give to anyone that's trying to figure out how to scale their business is think about what's next, and then align yourself with the brands and the people that are going to help you get there, because it can be lonely at the top. And all the money in the world, or whatever you benchmark as being success in an industry that can be a little narcissistic at times, might not matter.
Yeah.
Might not matter.
I feel like you're talking to me.
No, you're the vision.
But it's like, I need that book right now. And this whole new transition in my business, this coaching business and this podcast is taking off, and I'm going, oh, new world. And I think for real estate agents, everybody listening, there's always that cycle. There's always that point at which just maintain that vision and that evolution of growth that we've been talking about so much on this interview.
Yeah.
Last question. If we forget everything from this conversation today, which I find highly unlikely, but let's just say that happens and only one thing is remembered, what do you hope that it is?
Vision yourself in the season before you. Season yourself for that journey and enjoy the destination when you arrive to it, because everything else is just the journey that you're on, and you have better enjoy that journey along the way, because before you know it, life can change. And if you're in a process of pivoting constantly and understanding that with the stress and with the wins, and it is a balance, that is what your life is in this career. And that you just have to, inspect what you expect from that journey, and be very practical with it. Because I'm still chasing the journey, 25 years later, and I've just become more comfortable. And I would encourage your audience to try and find that same level of comfort in, there is no participation ribbon at the end of this. It's going to be what you make of it for yourself. And so much time is spent in arriving to that destination that, I think people forget to enjoy, enjoy the ride. But you still have to have that, because being upset or bewildered from what's happening to us in this economy or in this industry or in this policy is not going to help you find your way forward. So have the core strength to envision yourself in a different destination and do the work it takes with discipline, and do it in a way that is in balance with your life, with the support of the people around you. And you will find yourself in much more flow and much less friction.
When there's a crisis, right? See the opportunity in it, embrace it, get on the journey, and enjoy it.
Yeah. And in the depth of the crisis, and a final thought, I remember being on a call with owners right after, the world felt like it was shutting down in March of 2020. And I had a lot of other things going on at that hour too. And I just remember looking at the floor, listening to everyone saying they're hoarding cash and they're doing layoffs and they're closing offices. And it was literally like, everyone get in your bunker. And then I remember pivoting and looking up and just saying, there will be opportunity here. Culture will matter more than ever. There will be winners and losers associated with what's going to happen in the next couple of months. Now, no one could have ever imagined with low credit, or I should say low mortgage interest rates, and of course, a thirst to live and work differently in a COVID environment, with work from home or hybrid work weeks and all the world and how it's changed in technology. Wow, what a meteoric ride. So right when we thought everything, the lights were out, in a way, it was actually lighting of a wick that, turned into an explosive time for our industry. Now, with that great high, there was also the course correction. And now we're at the exact opposite effect, right? Where we're past the sugar high and now we're having a crash. And things are rebooting, and I've got that clear inflection point in mind. In fact, we're doing a lot of work to call that because it's giving more inspiration about what's next. But, what a difference just a couple of years had made. And no wonder we have whiplash. But every time you're feeling really high and, the world is great, put a few pennies away, diversify, plan for the winter because it's coming. And likewise, when you think that all hope is lost and, opportunities are passing you by, they aren't. They're there. You just need to find them and have the courage. So those would be my thoughts, because, you're looking at it. I'm still working through all that.
Wow. Dean, thank you so much. Like, what an honor to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you, Jerry. Congratulations on all your success. And look at how you've pivoted. And, you migrated from real estate to, being in the podcast and the coaching. I mean, you have so much to offer all of us. And I think you're doing a great service for our industry. So I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us for the Jerry Metcalf Podcast. To get links to our amazing guests, past shows, and more, go to breakthroughluxury.com. and click on podcasts, or find us anywhere you can find a podcast. And please subscribe to the show and leave us a 5-star review so that we know that you are getting the most out of what we bring you every week.